There we
There we
go.
go.
That's right.
Thank
Okay.
you.
Wait, back to you. Wait, wherever you went, who was
Oh,
it?
here it was Mora. Actually, I remember it. I was about 13 when I started to love astrology. So that's all.
And how did you first hear of it?
Just hanging out in bookstores, and I just started buying books. So anyway, I've never ever done it professionally or anything like that. It was always just a hobby.
Well, it's a beautiful language. It's an exquisite language. That's right. And I suppose, and see, I will aspire to put out, guidelines and standards and invite us all, including myself, to hold us to them, right? So there are five moon and Virgos here. I raise your hand, which I'm very comforted by. Some early Virgo, some late Virgo, everything humming. So, we can be critical. But so, critical, diagnostic, discerning, healing. And I've been saying lately, the virus is spiky, so let's be smooth, smooth and spiraling, smooth and spiraling. And we have our giant cauldron that we're going to animate, to our harumphitude cauldron too. But I was, the harumphitude is also an incentive because I was, there's some wonderful people putting astrology things out there. But there's also some things that sort of got my goat, especially around the election and everything. It's like, because it was so certain or impositional or reductionist, and like, oh. And so for everything, right? So to be critical, so it's like, so hone what you love and do it that way, right? Not just be grumpy about stuff. I use it as an incentive. And so we go, yeah. So I love this language as, guidelines. All right, so everybody's here. And you can chat in the chat as well. So just to go over our little missive, right? How cool. We remember the word cool, popularized by jazz musicians in the 40s, from a Yoruba word, kulukulu. And it meant completely responsible. It's a Saturn word, but the really cool part of being responsible, it's the man or woman dedicated to collective well-being, right? It's the Saturn Uranus community thing. The cool passage of drumming is just the drummer, the divine, the drum. No overplaying, right? So cool. And the Yoruba in Yoruba, the word also kulukulu means cool like temperature, right? So this is part of our practice, our repertoire. They said language is magic. To literally imagine our heads as cool, right? All the heat in the head going down to the heart, which is where it belongs, right? So it's cool head, warm heart. Opposite of road rage, right? Hot head, cold heart. Cool head, warm heart that allows each one of us to enter into hot situations as agents of cool response, right? Not hot reactivity, but cool response. And I think this language can really guide us to that, and where we guide people to their own autonomous repertoire of gifts to contribute. So yeah, and then all the different, things that we can share and practice, So I've been doing astrological readings for a long time. I still feel, I don't know what the word is. I'll use the word daunted, because it's like it's a big presumption to step out, go ahead. And I think it's useful also to throw everything into the cauldron. I mean, even though I love this language, as much as anything in the world, and every now and then I just go, what if it's all nonsense? Let me just throw it into the cauldron. And then there's just some remarkable, like, whoa, that was so great. There's no way I could have known that thing. This chart could not be anyone else but this person. It's like amazing, and what a mystery it is. We go, oh, and that's how it likes our brain to think, which is, to see if something works. It's like my friend Steve Behrman says, sure, it works in practice, but does it work in theory? Right? So we reverse all these things, and we go, right, and it does work. So then we wonder backwards the implications. Carl Jung was asked, how do you, he loved astrology, especially relationship astrology at the end of his life. And, how does it work, Carl? Is it causative or synchronous? And he said, well, there's a professor, at Yale, I think, Kroll, who's studying how light comes from stars into our pineal gland, which artificial lighting is somehow changing that, and has an effect, right? And Jung said, so this astrophysicist wouldn't want to be called an astrologer, but he's working on a causative realm. And then Jung says, the synchronous realm, that everything's in conversation with itself. And then Jung said, it's nature is never as tidy as we would have it. It's probably both, right? So in our council, we're open to everything. That I mean, I've known a few, very few, but a few crack predictor astrologies. The best predictor had a complete schizophrenic breakdown, but was just genius. 6 months out, he predicted, the American invasion, in which they arrested Noriega, and on the dates, and incredible. So that all exists, and some of one of our team, learning. We will all get to know each other, but I went over all of your beautiful, beautiful submissions and your charts and all. Studying what Renaissance horary astrology as well, and it's like, go team, bringing rich things to the council. It's a way of thinking, and a way of call and response, and a form of augury, that we love so much. And this language. So let me lower here. So and then part of our guideline, how does it teach us to dance? Venus, associated with the number five, forms a five-petaled orbital design over 8 years. Five in nature is what gives rise to spirals. Spirals are nature's way of resolving conflict, right? So whenever opposing forces come together, and this is how we get to play, I think, with squares and oppositions. There's absolutely a descriptive thing, and don't want to be too la la la about everything, but I view squares, hard angles, as assignments to get illusorily estranged principles to dance together in harmony. I love the dark Plutonic humor of astrology. When we can listen to our own and other people's challenging narratives, like, whoa, whew. And we go, as humans, we'd go, that's very challenging. As symbolists, we go, God, that's perfect. You're right on schedule. We'd be worried if you weren't in hell. I mean, there's a dark humor to the deal, but and then how shall we navigate the underworld, and each planet, and what shall we ladle out? So, so spiraling is one of our great guides. Linguistic spiraling, metaphorically, energetically. And it's related, it's like spiraling in a sense. It's got a swooshy Neptunian quality to it, but it's also, the other ruler of Pisces, Jupiter. I love all the things we learn. We tease into application that are useful to ourselves and others. What gets us through the underworld, and a friend, we were talking about, well, how do you dance with demons? What's the etiquette there? And she said, well, in all mythology and everything, when you meet a demon, you always ask them, what's your story? What's your story? It's the Jupiter default setting. You know, all the different parts of our psyche represented by planets have their different attitudes, again, customized for everybody. But Jupiter rising in the east for us now, trining Mercury. You know, a strong Jupiter was called a guardian angel, right? And the way you can think about that, the best guardian angel is that Jupiter's response to pretty much everything is curiosity. You know, oh, the world's on fire, and so, you know, Jupiter, how interesting. What are we going to do? Which is the best buoyancy, you know, the best buoyancy kind of coming up, and we go, right. So part of the magic of this language, and many of you know, you've had readings with or consultations with me, you know, that, oh, does a person want to say a thing? I imagine somebody clearing their throat. So whatever we speak to, this is where this language is so radical. You know, whatever we speak to, whatever planet, in a sense, we speak to in another is the part we're inviting to dance with the corresponding part of ourselves. So I find this language very heartening that way, you know, because we can get grumpy walking down the street going, oh, the humans, and you go, no, everybody's got this whole chart. Everybody's got a Uranus trickster. Everybody's got a dreamer. Everybody's got a sense of mission somewhere. It just hasn't been spoken to. So I view this language as liberating, intrinsically liberating. And where often, you know, my goat would get got, but in some pertinent ways, is, you know, to use this liberating language to in any way constrain somebody's sense of their possibilities is spiritual harassment. You know, and there are many astrologies, and there are people here who know Vedic, and Vedic is beautiful, and has many, many, doesn't use outer planets, but has many other, you know, interesting systems that account for that. But all astrologies give birth, all cultures give birth to their astrology. And I know many great astrologer colleagues, you know, who have been translating from the Greek, and all of this has something to contribute, right? So everything welcome. But I was at a particular, you know, Greek scholarly, you know, translating from Greek conference, and wonderful. I love this astrologer very much. His book on transits, I was like, oh, I want to do a better course than that, you know. But he did invite, you know, somebody. He said, who would like to have their chart interpreted according to traditional Greek, you know? And I knew, like, not me. Some innocent person was like, oh, me, you know. And the astrologer, whom I love, you know, but said, as you can see, things are going pretty well for this person, but soon she will develop a debilitating illness and her partner will leave her. I'm like, buy this woman a drink, right? Come on, we're getting out of here. So there's things that we get to question. And part of our cahooting is we wonder why the delusional virus has run rampant in spiritual, astrological, yoga, and Republican communities. And we go, what is that? And so each one of us, you know, the questions we ask will attract genius call and response answers. So, for me, I go, what, how'd this happen? And what is the receptor to delusional virus? 'Cause I've been in a lot of cults. I mean, I know how that can happen. And I go, dogma. Now we're back to the necessity of the heretic. Dogma. Anytime we believe something that we haven't earned, you know, we are open to the tyranny virus. And so in this language, you know, we study a lot, you know, and we try things on, and then we test them and go, yeah, maybe that's right. I think way back in prehistory, when I was beginning to practice astrology, you know, I would sometimes read out of the old time aspect books. Sometimes that was a big mistake. Going, oh, this says, you know, suicide. They go, yes, I'm thinking about it frequently. I'm like, perhaps don't read out loud before you've read the thing. But so we want to believe nothing but entertain possibilities. River, your mom has caught the QAnon delusional virus. Right. This is part of our council, to avail ourselves of all of our skills. And so people in cults, and I've been in and out, that was my early years. Just I'll check out anything. Anybody who said anything they had to teach, I'm like, I'm game, and then like now I'm tiptoeing backwards. Okay. So it's hard to leave a cult because one has outsourced one's Saturn, and gained one's identity from something inauthentic, and there's a heavy investment. So I view backstage magic work that the likes of which we can do. We're allowed to set in motion anything of which we would be the happy recipients is fair. So I think, and also, listening to Mary Trump's book, going, what in the American psyche and the global psyche has been particularly receptive to this deludo tyranny outsourced Saturn thing? And it's dogma, I think, is one. And then the receptors. And so talking people out of things, especially if one then gets into an oppositional thing, if you want to get people to get nothing done but conflict, convince the people they're on one side of something, says John Michael Greer, ally. What two needs is three. Now we're back to Jupiter, the unifying story. But also Neptune, our superpowers, our superpowers. Let me come back to the chart for a moment and say, what is here for us. So Venus has just set just now, from where I am and we're convening, right? So Venus has just set below the horizon, 16 Scorpio Western horizon, 16 Scorpio here, woman made fertile by her own spirit. opposite the moon, it speaks to the tradition that we all come from. Trines Neptune. How fun. Neptune sextiles these guys too. So solve coagula. Neptune says dissolve and reimagine. In cahoots with Pluto. Here's the cauldron. Dissolve and reimagine. Dissolve and reimagine. So I like, and again, some of you may have heard me say this, oh, I just will repeat things anyway. So we look to nature. Honey badgers and possums are immune to cobra venom. And cobra venom, like a virus, is a marvel of symmetry. It locks right into human breathing. But the honey badgers and the possums have shapeshifted, evolved to shapeshift their receptors so the venom no longer fits. So part of our backstage work, right, is to imagine. Here, look, Neptune's moving through our 11th house of community. It's a team of public dreamers. To imagine the receptors in the American psyche, in your mom's psyche, in the world, shrinking so that the tyranny, despotism virus no longer fits. So that, everything into the cauldron, we go, what about impossible things? So that despotism is no longer available in the human repertoire. It's like, where did I put despotism? I know it's somewhere. It's like, no, it's dissolved. Again, against all odds, against all odds, and then just to frame a little bit about who else is here, and then I do want to open it up for a little more play. But there's it is such a rich chart. So, whoops, what's wait a minute, my screen, there we go. So there's, we're tracking patterns. So at first we look at things and we go, oh, and then we go, well, what's rising here? Chiron at 11 Aries retrograde, Ceres Demeter dwarf planet at 11 degrees Gemini. We go, oh, 11, 11, a beautiful 60 degree angle of collaborative cahooting. These are the two mythological founders of human ritual initiation theater. So part of our vocabulary. And again, everything wants to be customized, all of how each one of us approaches all this, will be unique. And we love that. So So I'm proffering, how I've journeyed, So Chiron, a lot of astrologers call the wounded healer, and Chiron and I find that tedious, right? Because he didn't. We think it's a cover up of the much more interesting thing. It's true he could heal where he'd been wounded, but he never gained his identity from that and never complained. But the important part is he's the first mentor. Remember, we're crafting the future by gazing at the caravan of our past mentors. And ideally, we're stirring things up in our own psyche, so dreams and things. So Chiron, is the first mentor, centaur mentor. That's right, we talked about that, Michael. He starts a school. He starts a 5-week astrology council. No, he starts a school for future cultural heroes. There we go, everybody. Oh, look, the moon has just risen. How exciting. It's just a fun thing, right? Venus is set, the moon is rising. There we go. Okay. And he teaches Orpheus how to play the lute, and he teaches Asclepius how to be the Greek god of healing. So in antiquity, healing and art are one thing. Look at our loaded sixth house of art and deep delving. Art and healing are one thing. You cannot, ancient mind over here in the West peers at the modern world. What are you modern people talking about? That there's art over here and healing over there? They belong together. In Chiron's mystery school, the students' tasks are impossible, impossible, but they're always successful after they study with Chiron, and we're just teasing this into our repertoire. So in Chiron's mythology, to be underestimated is considered a positive strategic advantage, because if you're going to do something impossible, might as well make it a surprise, right? And so I do love that, and so again, it's part of the reversal. Like when people go, "Those people don't take me seriously," we go, "That's excellent. You get into Chiron school." But for our purposes, Chiron goes throughout antiquity and he founds these real places, right? Mythic figures founding real things, magnetizing metaphor into matter, magnetizing metaphor into matter. So he founds these Asclepions, these cultural centers of dream incubation, healing, and theater. And apparently in Pergamon, they keep the ritual going. So one would be drummed down into the dream incubation chamber, having first drunk rhodiola root tea, just a lovely adaptogen to come into balance, and made one's dedication, as we are doing tonight, that one would have a healing dream for oneself and one's community. And so we have records, that they did. And it was just common understanding to all the interesting Leo moons and everything in our team, that and fifth house, that one would only have the value of an insight or the value of a dream once one had given it the inward experience, outward creative expression. And only in that way would one have the power of one's dream or insight. And I think, for all of us in this practicing realm, how do we cooperate with this language? It's like there's a world of difference between, excuse me, powerful insight about my father and making a little altar to that or a little poem to that, So that's what they did. They'd have the dream, they'd give outward expression, write a poem, something, plant a tree. A ritual is any physical thing we do that we imbue with dedicated symbolism. And having done that, they'd have the power of their dream and they'd go back to their communities as seed Renaissance people. So that all really happened. And Chiron's, rising up here for fun and in cahoots with Ceres, and says, well, the Asclepions want to come back. They don't have to look like what they did look like. They could look like a five council astrology transit program, or whatever, where, we go, okay, incarnational actuality. I love Pluto, sextile Neptune, dreams, metaphors are the incarnational garb that power wears to enter into the world, right? That's just our one of our playful things, why our metaphoric and linguistic, why our words, our stories, our metaphors want to be in accord with our dedicated heart. So we perhaps don't want to make plans concrete, or perhaps we want to make them mulchy. We don't, well, this is where we'll play. So that all really happened. And I think it's intriguing, you know, Chiron's at 11 plus Aries, and intimacy with this language, you know, again, as we journey along. So I love the Sabian symbols. Not all of them, right? I mean, humans made them up. But I learned them by pretty much every chart that I did, I would look up the Sabians, right? And had definite favorites. And we know in synchronicity, you know, and Aaron, how wonderful. I saw Aaron being born. And I said, someday you will grow up to get me organized. And she is, as well as many other things, right? Aaron's sun is 25 Capricorn. My rising sign is 25 Capricorn. We have Pluto transits, many other people here too. But there's a genius. I mean, Aaron is doing a lot of the scheduling, but there's a genius. The readings I have, people who don't know each other, but it'll be the same, like, oh, you know, third Venus at 16 Scorpio this week. Just, you know, oh, apparently reporting in for duty. Right, there we go. So the auguries and the patterns, and we go, oh, that's great. So Ceres, Demeter, dwarf planet, but a welcome part of the vocabulary. She's the other founder of ritual initiatory theater and reporting in. And so she's the founder of the Eleusinian Mysteries, longest initiatory theater in human history. I think it's a couple hundred years, but I'll get back to you on the exact time next week. The Road to Eleusis is a great book. But at the Asclepions, Rhodiola Ruti, lovely adaptogen, at the Eleusinian Mysteries, definitely psilocybe mushroom brew. So people would gather in Eleusis, they would drink this psilocybe mushroom brew, they would dance all night, and then everyone had a personal insight that they weren't supposed to say, because sometimes the Scorpio parts speak like great 19th century magician Eliphas Levy, to know, to dare, to will, and to be silent, to not talk out the deepest desire until it's begun to attract molecules, right? So everybody had one of those. But then everybody had a collective entheo community vision in which they saw Persephone, oh, we'll just do over here, descend into the underworld, a maiden, return an initiated queen. So anytime we think about the Eleusinian Mysteries, which happened around now, it was right around the autumnal equinox when this ceremony was held. And we go, ah, well, you know, and I think, you know, it was in 1981, having tea with my astrologer friend, Jim Lewis, and he was looking through the ephemeris, and he said, oh my God, look at 2020. I'm like, what? He goes, well, it's the Pluto, Jupiter, Saturn, Mercury conjunction at 22 plus Capricorn. And that's when we both said, ah, what form will the cauldron of death and rebirth take then, do you suppose, right? So there's that dynamic. But with the cauldron, it's like, what shall we ladle out? You know, may this country emerge from this cauldron with ingenious altruism. May we're all in this thing together, regardless of temporary age, race, and gender, you know, descending into the underworld, and uninitiated, it doesn't matter about age, there's some puer, there's some puella part of all of us that goes to the underworld and goes, getting ready to return, you know, in our own crafty fashion to emerge from this. So there. So that's one of the things that's available. So let me move us over here. Let me move this up over here. So let me. We get to set our Neptunian atmosphere, our group atmosphere, and our larger atmosphere too. And so I was, you know, suggesting some things, but But you know, may it be, well, I like the criterion, you know, may this language guide all to their own autonomy. May it be equal Mars and Venus, may it be equal, you know, humans and kin, you know, is our playful trickster self, not always perfect, sometimes crosses the line, welcome, and we go, yes. So may this be a place where people feel that it's fun to be spicy, you know, and that it's safe. And there are there other oh, a good book of the Sabian. Oh, I see. That's good. A good book on the Sabian symbols. Well, right here's well, there are many. You know, the original one. You know, Dane Rudyard's book, and then which is the these ancient these books have been all over the place. Right here's my Dane Rudyard book, the thing. It's sort of the classic. I mean, I think he has a Mercury Neptune affliction, so his language is sometimes, well, everything needs to be chewed up, right? So we all cast our net of curiosity widely, and we inhale it in, and we use our standards of discernment. I like this from here, but not that thing. We brew it together. So astrological mandala is the classic Mark Edmund Jones, oh, Dane Rudyard, excuse me. Dane Rudyard, an astrological mandala. It's useful. I still consult it sometimes. And then my quirky buddy, Steve Eardley, there are many Sabian scholars whose pen name is Martin Goldsmith, has put out his own Sabians, and he got grumpy at me because I forgot to write him a blurb for the back of the book because some of the changes he made were fabulous, and some of them were like, oh no, don't do it like that. Anyway, so it's kind of rummage around and feel what resonates. But see, everything's alive. We're in participatory animism. And so magnetizing what one needs. And then what I was going to show you is this is the Sabian symbol book that I use. It's from Washington, D.C. We used to have a Sabian symbol. There were cute little astrology communities, for goodness sake. They've all seemed to have disappeared. You know, in molecular form, but just a few couple of key words. You know, this was put together by two of those guys, and I, you know, I think I've had this copy since I can't even remember, maybe the 80s. But it's very treasured. Yeah. You know, so we will the book. Oh, that's great. And Aaron says, I will include Caroline's oft-referenced ones. You mean the Sabians, right? A book about Chiron and his school. What I know, and then sort of took off on my own, there are books out there about Chiron. Again, we want our discernment. It's like, you know, I'm not sure about the Pleiades. And anyway, but you know, going right. I learned much from my friend Dale O'Brien, who is completely dedicated to Chiron. But it's also when people get their specialties, it's like for him, everything is Chiron. Everything's Chiron. I'm like, I like a little bit. I like a little bit there. But he taught me these crucial things, which is I mean, he is a centaur mentor. So he lives in a cave, Chiron does, because he's a half horse. But he is the most knowledgeable and kindest of all beings, right? So he really represents the right relationship of wild nature and human culture, thin membrane, in harmony. That this is the, these are the Librans, these are the Venuses, the Libra cultural Venus, the sensual, animistic Taurus Venus, and we go right, which is why I think really just oh the part of the pertinence of this language and the crucialness of now and you know what is the future we're crafting together, and how do we save as much life as possible, you know, so you know the Uranus and Taurus, the whole phrase biomimicry, I think, is essential. And great mentor in the world, Janine Benyus, the founder of biomimicry, rather than looting nature, let's borrow her recipes. And I view this language as so much a part of that, so guiding in its participation and this kind of call and response. So I don't have a book about Chiron that I love. I've gathered from different people, but we can all on what are Sabian symbols and how to use them in astrology, asked Trelawney. So it's these are old traditions always being reworked. So the tradition of a metaphor for each degree of the zodiac, an image, goes back to ancient Egypt. And again, everything can be liberating or imprisoning, right? So I've tracked some of them back. And Steve Eardley is a symbol scholar, I mean, PhD kind of astrology guy. And some of them are divinatory and wonderful. And some of them are, if you're born this day, you will be eaten by a crocodile. And it's like, no, let's not do that one. All right, there we go. Let's forget that. Sifting, sifting, sifting. What is a fear-based, priesthood imposing on this beautiful language, and how do we track it back to its original thing? But the ones that are most used now were channeled by Elsie Wheeler and Mark Edmund Jones sitting together in Los Angeles outside, just going, and we just see if it works, right? But I just remember, going, and once a long time ago, I was about to go to somebody's house to do a reading in Providence, Rhode Island. There's a Providence teammate here. And I noticed that just the transit that day, powerful Sabian, it was sort of, and the image for it was a drowning man is released. So when I met with the person, I said, does that make any sense to you? And he goes, I almost canceled our appointment because my father died last night of emphysema. He drowned. And I was the drowning man as well. I'm like, ooh, goosebumps, right? Just a little like, and then sometimes it's so, they're so literal, but to, and then we have favorites, and so I find it useful. But I also mentioned to myself and others, humans made these up. So, and that's also something I think part of our democracy of working with each other and with charts. And it's an ongoing art form, how much to talk, how much to not talk, but I do aspire to check in going, does that resonate with yourself? Is that useful? Are we in the right story? And if that image is useful, then good. And if not, just let it go. And then what we can do a little bit of here. So there's that, and there's that. So the basic love and our guide through this series of five kahootings is let me just show everybody. Okay, so here's back to our chart that is unfolding even as we speak. And then I can just put people in the middle for the fun of it. Let's see. And is everybody up for having their chart put in the middle if we go do a little fast thing? Is that if anybody goes, no, don't do it. All right. So, we might want you to say hi. So let's put Virginia in the middle. So what we have here is in the middle is Virginia's chart where the planets were when Virginia was born. And the outer rim is where all the planets are now. And the primary way we time our appointments, right, our unfoldments in this language is called transits. Where are the planets wheeling around us, and how do we engage with them? So, let's see, and I have some kind of interesting little notes over here. Well, we're on our own here. But and this is where people are welcome, but and what we can move through, kind of quickly thing. But we go, so my favorites, right? I mean, everything is equal and wonderful, right? But I love Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. the three outer planets, large by energetic symbolism, even if not by mass in Pluto's case. These Pluto, Neptune, Uranus, and everybody else, but, you know, represent huge forces of nature's evolutionary intelligence, and they're keepers of the whole big story, biological and cultural. So when they dance with us, and they're dancing with everybody in our team, you know, one is they are deconditioning. It's like a bazillion years of spiritual deconditioning, in a relatively short time, and each, it can be intense. Deconditioning and dissolving and bubbling away. Each one has a different flavor and a different proffering of guiding. And what I would love for us also to do, and as practice of, you know, being stewards of this beautiful language, you know, is to envision each of us working with the transits in a liberating way, like, alrighty then. So for the fun of it, so Pluto moving through Virginia's ninth house forever, right? Kind of, it's like dum dum dum dum. Long time, you see that the Pluto, what Jim Lewis was looking at, right? He was looking in 1981 at 2020, at January of 2020. The Pluto, Saturn, that's right, Mercury, Jupiter conjunction at 22 Capricorn. Well, it says, well, anybody got anything at 22 degrees? I mean, all of us can think of this, right? And we go, oh, Virginia's Jupiter is at 22, you wild person there. And it's like, ooh, you are so tapped into the enormous of the death rebirth cycle, everything into the cauldron. So the micro initiation, you know, and there's a lot of ways we can pitch this to people. And feel free to chime in, Virginia, if you want, because you said that, you know, your journey has been arduous, right?
Yes, you know, very much.
Hmm?
Yes, very much. And I thought that the first part of the pandemic, I got to work, you know, I got to do a lot of personal work. And I thought like, by halfway, then I thought like, last year, I thought like, okay, I got it. And from now on, I'm like, here, I understand. And then at the end, like in March, it just, everything got swept under my feet.
Well,
like everything that I thought, like I...
Right. And see, as humans, we go, oh, dear. But as astrologers, we go, God, that's perfect, Virginia. Because the Pluto, we never say to Pluto, like, oh, I'm really out of the underworld now. No. The ground opens up and we fall in. You know, it's like, you know, and whatever we say, you know, Pluto plays hardball in the world and with each one of us. Pluto says, what do you think you need for your Jupiter, for your joy? Let's see if you really do. Let's take all that away. Let's make the outer circumstance so unreliable that it's like a free fall and going, well, what takes care of me when the usual supports are gone? And then in brewing the medicine for others, but let's, you know, we want to honor everybody, but just for the fun, we're pattern tracking beings. So we go, Pluto squares for Jupiter, but look how cool. Jupiter, 22 Libra, trines her Chiron. So it's like, what to look for, mentors, inner mentors, outer mentors. And look, Jupiter's right there right now. So in a sense, it's like we do want to set up a structure that guides us through our journey of being able to break old spells and take new vows. And it's a complex, welcome concept of complicity, not shame, not blame. But whatever's going on in our personal lives and in the collective, in some way we're contributing creative chi to that. Now, sometimes there's a collective horror that whatever, but still we're introducing creative complicity. So it's like, so the pressure, we go, but look, you know, you have Dorothy's slippers in your backpack. You have all the things that you needed. Sometimes we just experiment more when things are tough in some way. Now, it's true that, you know, well, I want let's see, there's many things I want to say. That, you know, we're all dancing, and Pluto's been squaring your Venus and squaring your Jupiter and many things, you know, and it will oppose your moon for bonus points, right? So, but it's not the same thing over and over again, you know, and it's like, so we all say, and this is for everybody born in the 50s and everybody with planets and moon in Leo. So in the sky right now, there is almost a yod, right, which is Neptune, 60 degree angle to Pluto. If there were a planet here, and look, it's Virginia's Pluto, it would create what's called a yod, a finger of destiny. It's two planets, 60 degree angle, 150 degree angle, 150 degree angle, or close enough for mythological work. So everybody born in the 50s has Pluto in Leo. So they're part of this. It's like, and the yod, again, I think of it like a sword and a stone, meaning if we don't work it, it just feels quirky. But if we work it, it's like, whoa. And it's this very interesting conversation in the world right now between Pisces and Leo. And for all of us who love this language and whatever we do with it, meaning it's not performance, it's magic. This is the death and resurrection show. This is your ancestral land. This is Teresita in back of you going, this is Teresita's, you know, Aztec granny going, feel your feet going into the ground, you know, and roots growing from them. Right. There's not a lot of, well, your Mercury's in Taurus. There we go. And see also, we will have as much structure as you like in the fullness of time. But the 12th house, I'm quite fond of liberating astrology and everything. It's above the horizon, so it has to do with cultural participation. But it's the last house, right? So I view this as any mainstream culture's unconscious, what any mainstream culture has forgotten but must remember, has undervalued, but what is of great value. So it's Virginia's Mercury, which is here, which is, you know, what have we forgotten that we must remember? The voice of the land, how to listen, how to cooperate with everything. Does that feel like part of yourself?
Yes, very much.
Right. And so.
And I think like one of the main things is that I, late in life, I found that story in my own culture, you know, Toltec, Mexica people and the great connection they had, you know, in the relationship with the land and the cosmos, you know.
Right.
But.
Before we move on, just with blessings, we want to bless everybody. So Pluto going right. You are the Eleusinian mysteries. You know, it's like, all right, descend into the underworld. I like saying this week's underworld spa special is a rose lavender scrub, right? Just to remove any daunted young girl part of oneself going to get ready to be. Your Pluto's image is an unsealed letter bearing a royal stamp. And we go, oh, look at you. And it does dance with this yod, which is, you know, the death and resurrection show, the power of metaphors, the power of intention, you know, to cooperate with Pluto. What are you willing to release? You know, backs of closets, old things, you know, as I mentioned in our missive, you know, when we began, the moon in Taurus was at a particular kind of psychoanalytic degree of like emptying out closets and bringing old things to light and just, but your mentor, you are a mentor, you have a mentor. You know, and also the top of your people, astrologers speak of this vertical axis, the midheaven, the point overhead is work, and it is work, but it's bigger than that. It's our antenna into the collective. What we're calibrated to send and receive. And Virginia's, yours is it's my north node. It's a white dove descends bearing a message of peace. And we go, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, that's good. And you go, right, it's earned from all that you've been through. But we love the yod, and we want to think about everybody's Pluto and everybody's Leo planets here. And this is our first kind of cruising through. We'll come back to everything as well. Are you still in your releasing, shape-shifting thing, part of yourself, initiation, appointment?
Yes, and I think that I went from making peace with my, you know, the physical material part of my life at first, and then I was initiated into the more soulful, you know, the world of the unseen. And I think that's where, I don't know how to explain it, but in a way I feel, I don't know if this is a trickster. I feel that I'm being shown how the decisions that we make are woven into, you know, they have consequences, obviously. And
what kind of support and help would you like? Just we're going to keep this very short. Bluto says, you know, we're letting go of everything, navigating the underworld. The oldest detective novels in the world, because I was wondering how old they are, myths, fairy tales, detective novels. So 231 BC in China are the oldest detective novels. And they said, if you're going to be a detective, a magistrate, and wander in the underworld, as everyone here is in some fashion, it's good to have some buddies. It's, you know, and may we be that here. It's good to have some buddies with whom to have dark humor and cheat death to keep us jaunty. And then they said, you know, the idea of releasing what's not authentic and magnetizing what is. Mm-hmm. Huge opportunities. We notice that Neptune in the sky is squaring her Saturn, the entire family tradition of anything that was difficult. But the whole structural framework, it's like, all right, dissolve and reimagine everything into the cauldron. You know, and part of our unfolding, you know, how do we break old spells and take new vows? But so it's good to have buddies. May we be buddies to each other in underworld. And they said, your greatest protection in the underworld is authenticity. You know, mm-hmm. And they said, if we are dedicated, as we all may we be, that our inner self and our outer self are, you know, related, right? They said, then here's what will happen. You know, demons and bad people will come up and go, I was going to rob you and kill you, but I can sense that you're for real. So I want to join your team. But I have underworld skills you will need. I think this is so pertinent for all of us now to cross borders, to speak to the desirable, to invite in ourselves and others to play who brought what, you know, to organize the guiding story. And just even using Virginia's dance, you know, as pertinent to all of us, may it be so, to... Well, it's a huge deconditioning of letting go of old images of oneself, right, and everything. But Jupiter here, you know, and Uranus, Jupiter and Uranus in the sky for all of us in different ways are the two biggest path openers. And Jupiter says, right, and we talked about this in people's charts that I've talked to, Jupiter transiting your Chiron, it's going to station here, go forwards and backwards. We go, you have much to offer to world. Jupiter says each chapter of your life, however challenging, has been building in some essential talent for the making of your ultimate happiness. And Jupiter at the top of your chart is kind of laying the path. Next year, Saturn will be here too, at the top of your game, however you choose to define that, going, Jupiter says to everybody and says to Virginia, I will make you wealthy woman by your definition of wealth. What is that? And because it's making a very quirky angle to your moon, right, there we go. We've got another fun 150-degree angle there. to tease your big mama, Moon Cancer kindness into community. Perhaps all of us at this equinoctial time and why we started gathering right now, time to emerge. It's like, boy, it'd be fun to have people to play with, you know, and a team and people to cheat death and laugh with, you know. And is that, would that be fun for yourself, Virginia, before we leave you for the moment?
Yes.
Right. So buddies with whom to cheat death, and authenticity. And our capacity to to animate the desirable story. So there's that. So we're back to just ourselves for the moment. You know, and does anybody want to well, let's see, I'm just looking at the notes. It said well, this sort of we want to, in the fullness of time, you know, tease things into practical application. But so everybody, most people here have a pretty good sense of the vocabulary, you know, and so and our own rituals of how we want to do readings, or how we want to speak of this, or how we want to be messengers for this beautiful language. Now, so it says, you know, the planets represent living, you know, and this is in the language, but it is something kind of unique that I've come to, and may it catalyze everybody's uniqueness. The planets, you know, represent living qualities of intelligence that reside within us and connect us to the world. You know, and even just speaking of them is to invite them. They're like, oh, whatever we speak to in another, you know, we're feeding that. So the planets, this is all of us, you know, in a sense, are the living intelligences. And we become detectives, you know, we track things. So that's how we kind of learn, going, you know, here's three people who are Aries, quite different, but I can feel the thing. And says, you know, there is a quality, it's the essence of ritual magic. There's a quality that we'll call Mars, that is associated with the color red, you know, and red things and red drinks and rubies and energy and Tuesday and whatever. So we line that up. So the planets are living intelligences. They represent living intelligences. The zodiac is their adverb, in what way, and then they're moving through the houses. Houses are man-made, the horizon is real, you know, and the point overhead, houses are man-made, and we can all kind of play with this. But I think for all of us, you know, to have a sense of the grammar, and then, you know, how we approach this craft, this language. So many years back, my friend Jay Arnell said that whenever he was about to do a reading, his own thing would be, you know, free me from ego magic and fill me with the capacity to name with my head, my heart, and my instinct all that this person needs named for their greater health, happiness, and contribution to collective well-being, right? That's something we sort of crafted together. But, yeah, and it's very much his phrase, free me from ego magic, but it's like, yeah, the gist of it. And I think it's good to have an incantation, you know, and again, because the language is so complex, you know, whenever I head in, you know, I, as you know, people I've worked with for a while, you know, it's the incantation going, you know, even if we all know it, I go, here we are, this is a real map, it's a symbolic map, everything real, everything symbolic. It's how this language wants to guide us into participation. The world is always speaking to us through symbolism, you know, and we are pragmatic mystics, may it be so. So an incantation and a dedication. And then, you know, and then we kind of wend our way around. Does anybody have an ardent desire for their chart to be put in the middle before we deconvene? No. Well, all right, be that way. Let's see. I'll just come back into human form. Well, there we go. Okay, so no one today. All right, fair enough. All right, then let me come back to it to our deconvening. Does anybody want to invoke something into the atmosphere of our cahooting? Anything that one might like. Everybody's free to unmute and say, may everyone hear, what was it? Well, let me come back to the chart, because it does help me think, you know. So to honor everything, we go, may it be an atmosphere, you know, of everyone dancing with Pluto, everyone dancing with Pluto, going, and how do we encourage that? You know, going, all right, it's like, you know, Rumi was an actual astrologer, and Barış İlhan, my Turkish astrology person, did translate it, you know, one of the things. But basically, the gist of what Rumi said, when Kader and Kazer, when difficult things, when Pluto transits happen in the sky, whatever, you cannot avoid them. You're only The only way to go is to run towards them with delight. Okay, so we want to bless everyone, going, all right, how do we dance with this? And also, what's your story? What's your story? Oh, right. And we want to tease this into everything, to talk to everything, to talk to the to converse with the virus, the all of those things. You know, to we know Jupiter's Sabian image is, well, the image says, freed from passion, you know, a man or woman teaches anew. I want to change it a little. We get to study things and then change them a little bit. Freed from passion. It's Aquarius, you know. And so I like, you know, part of the everything can be liberating or constraining. So Aquarius is hyper, a part of all of us that's hyper aware of cultural image, right? But rather than, you know, a person freed from passion, I think it would be so that what's going on with other people is information, but not constraint. Right? So it's like, oh, well, that's interesting, as opposed to a constrained thing. So we might say then that Jupiter is freed from concern about what other people think, freed from societal constraint. A person is willing to teach anew and to contribute their gift. And what's being bestowed upon us, you know, may it be that each person, the description of each person here, you know, is a storyteller. And Mars in Libra, you know, again, in wonderful mutual reception with Venus, says, what is the Venusian hero? And now we've got the trickster thing going. The Venusian hero in all of us that we may awaken in our respective ministries, you know, is the power of the storyteller. But the Venusian hero is interested in liberating each component and the entire circumstance itself, right? Not counting on it, but willing to liberate even the tyrant, you know. And Jupiter goes, right, more room for everyone, and our, you know, and may our language craft. And are there people here who want to be language participants in culture through their writing, through their teaching, through their social media? Is that, we go, yes, there we go. Thank you. Very good. Okay, there's one person who's raising their hand. Excellent. Excellent. Two hands. Excellent. And there's a slightly unmuted person. That's good. So Jupiter goes, yeah, whoever raises your hand, you know. And we do love, you know, we'll get to the, well, we do have a quintile in this chart. And I like, some people use 800 asteroids, you know. I stick to the four, but I also like Chiron and Ceres very much. We do have a quintile between the Sun, dawn of a new day reveals everything changed, and Juno. It's a 72-degree angle between these guys. Pretty close. And again, everybody approaches this language, and who brought what, and we all know, together we all know more than any one person. So when I was, again, a little tiny astrology student in London at the Astrological Lodge, quintiles. 72 degree angles. I'm grateful because they're a little bit obscure, and I'm grateful for computers because it was hard to see the 72 thing, but nonetheless we did. So I learned it as irresistible eloquence. And what we did, we used to read authors, so we learned it as literary, but it can be anything in our story craft. So we would read authors, and if they had this texture, this quirky, interesting texture, a quintile is a division of the circle by five, now we're back to Venus, right? 72 degree angle, division of circle by five. So if they had this quirky, irresistible eloquence, we would then look up their charts and go, oh, they did have this pretty rare 72 degree angle, that the way it's evolved in my affinity tradition, it's got to be within about 2 degrees. And we go, oh, they did, right? So we could feel it. We could feel it and then back it up going, right. And then recently, a wonderful astrological colleague of mine of 40 years, right? Yeah. She said, Caroline, the quintile is that irresistible eloquence, but it's also the capacity to open portals between worlds. I'm like, all right, yeah, now we're talking. If it's not true, let's make it true. The reason I love the quintile and just want to make this available to all of us here now, this is all our collective chart, is it's so democratic. It's a capacity, and I think how we approach readings and speaking and everything, it's a capacity to have a true perception, and to be like a tuning fork, so that we hum in others, so we don't have to persuade anybody or convince anybody, which means to conquer them. It would be as though they go, oh, since you guided my gaze, I see that now. So a long-lasting influence, and then, which I infinitely prefer to the overuse of the word impact, right? Really, you want a sudden, violent, short encounter impact, right? How about a long, curvy influence? There we go. And the word influence comes from astrology, to flow in. A lot of our language comes from astrology, bless its heart. You know. So I love that. So the sun, dawn of a new day, reveals everything changed to Juno. And from my friend, we all learn from our friends who loves Juno. Right, I hope so. Juno is, again, my friend Sylvia says, Juno is like Juno-esque. It's our role. Later in mythology, Juno is the cuckolded, betrayed wife, but that's way late, you know. Before that, she's the voice of the law, not human law, the voice of doing, contributing. And so this beautiful quintile available to everybody, and Juno's at a particularly dynamic life as a grand adventure degree, and we go, right. So we go, well, whoever, you know, is up for irresistible eloquence, a life is a grand adventure, to be influential by their own definition, you know, that's available, you know, and you get to make your own kind of deal with that. I do like the changing of now. Now we have three Gemini and the North Node rising. This is Holly and Mistletoe, druidic life force rising up. Yorna says to all of us, I am unlocking. Its little glyph looks like an H with a circle drop below it, so it looks like an archaic jail key. Unlock yourself and pass it on. It's squaring these guys. It's opposite Venus. So Yorna says, I'm one of your booking agents. Where would you like genius? And Terry Pratchett says, genius is always sleeting through the universe until it finds a receptive molecule. And then it's like Shakespeare. So where would we like genius? Chiron chimes in and says, well, I'm happy to be part of this team here. I'm sextiling Saturn. I've got a sextile, Chiron sextile Saturn. Again, community input, that's really good. And then it's got a beautiful sextile here. There we go. There's that particularly beautiful thing. So, rhodiola root tea or magic mushrooms, take your pick. Either one, those are all available. Pluto says when journeying through the underworld, underworld things, mushrooms, mycelia, roots, you know, what supports us, you know, when the old structures are going. But it's like, you know, and you know, with Virginia and everybody with the transits of Pluto, people can bring up, you know, it's a deconditioning going, all right, let go. There's just fun, fun. And the opportunity for recreation, recreation. So we do love that. And then, well, we're in our disciplined improv. Oops. Okay, I'm putting us over there for a second. No, never mind that. Okay, let me put us back over here. Okay, do that thing. So since we are Saturn, we're growing the craft of how we shall cahoot. What would people like most from our journey? You can just telepath it, or you can, or you can, or you can chat it. You know, what gives enthusos, that which makes the divine within us dance? Do we feel a, may we invoke a common feeling of the powerful opportunity and danger of now? And how useful it is for us all to cultivate our considerable skills, you know, and to encourage others as well to decondition, that something original and ancient may come through us in some powerful way, that we may be agents, again, first responders, not first reactors. Those are, you know, part of my dream goals.
We have some great things happening in the chat
Oh,
too.
good. Yay. Well, how wonderful. All right. Oh, that's excellent. Okay. Yes. Oh, good. Yes. Well, it's wonderful software. It's no longer made. That's why I can't ever upgrade my computer system, right? Because they stopped making it. So whenever it says, you know, upgrade now, no, never, never. So I'm working on finding something as useful as this. Oh, that's good. That's good. That's good. Thank you. Oh, that's wonderful. How wonderful. Oh, there's people here. Oh, what a relief. I feel so much happier. Excellent. There we go. Okay, all the way back here. That's good. And Megan said she'd be interested. I'm open for it. I didn't know. I didn't know. I've been isolated. Now I'm back with the team. What a relief. There's so many good things here. All right. Not an ardent desire, but an interest. All right. We'll wait for ardor to ignite you. Open to it. We'll get to Mia and everybody in our next cahoot. Yes, and Megan. Okay, Megan changed her tune. Megan became more ardent within minutes. That's excellent. Right, to hear people's voices before we deconvene, just a hello or a little more, so we may play together as we move ahead. Yes. It would be good. It would be good. You know, the chat is good too. But for everybody to say hi, I love this. What I'm up for, or just hi Aries, right? Keeping it short, but that would be really good. Feel free to unmute Liberty Hall. Autonomy is a sacrament, or not. There's a lot of strong-willed, disobedient heretics here. I don't want to tell anybody what to do because you won't do it, and that's great. And Barbara says, my Pluto transit this week brought an excavation of a wall of my house down to the foundation. Oh, that's right. That's good. An excavation of my gums down to the roots of my teeth. There we go. It all works together. Oh, wait. Megan entered the waiting room. I don't know. Did she? She went away and came back. Yeah, into the cauldron and ladling out dry walls and healthy teeth and gums, right, for self and others, right?
Yeah, maybe so.
Right, for self and others, you know, and a round of great teeth and dry walls for all beings. That's really good. And then Trelawney says, yes, she'd like to hear other people's voices. Start us off, Trelawney.
Hello, everyone. I'm from Sweden, so I'm a little tired right now. My voice is a little sleepy as well. But I am new to astrology. I would say brand spanking new. So to all the experienced astrologers come before me, thank you. And then my fellow astrologers that are taking this class that are brand new, really happy to be on this journey with you as we're trusting our guides to lead us to the, you know, the resources. It's really like I'm holding back my desire to like ask Carolyn, well, what book should I read, or should I get that information, and just letting this information just wash over me and trusting that my guides will lead me to the source, you know, or a source or multiple sources to gather additional information. But hello, everyone.
Wonderful. Yeah. You seem to have, Barbara, you seem to have the spotlight for.
I'm glad to see new astrologers coming on the call. Old time fan of Caroline. So I understand the language, a lot. So that's a good feeling.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll go next, I guess. I want to say thank you so much for hosting this. I came across you in the ESAR presidential conference, and I was very uninspired by everyone's talk, but yours blew my mind. Excellent. And I knew I had to learn more. I've been studying astrology for like the last 7 years. My grandmother was an ardent hobbyist for synastry and relationship compatibility. And it wasn't until the last couple of years that I really dived in much deeper. And I'm the one taking the Renaissance Horary course as well. And I sense myself as an undercover agent in that community, as Horary can be very traditional and fatalistic. And I'm having fun just learning the theory and remaining unattached to that. And using this as a counterbalance to that 20-week heavy course that I'm in right now. We're halfway through it.
And is it, you know, where did I put my watch?
Or yeah, that, or where's the missing body? And that's been kind of an interesting, speaking of detective novels, you know, looking for missing people or missing bodies or whodunit.
Right. Well, you know, again, so many ways to teach and learn this language. When I was studying with Isabel Hickey, well, I mean, so many really praiseworthy cranks carried the torch for so long. and so Isabel Hickey was, a hoot of a character in Boston. But she taught the astrology classes, by studying disasters. So she'd like, oh, the plane crash, that's in your chart too. There we go. Anyway, so we go, right, you know, all those things. And good for you, Renaissance Horary. Again, what does it want to be? You know, the call and response auguries. You know, everything's telling us its story all the time, shape, color, song, rhythm, if we approach in a ritualized fashion. You know, and when we get to everybody's, you know, Virgo moons, okay. But it's like ritual magic or obsessive compulsive disorder. Take your pick, right? It's like, here's the neurotic thing. Here's the liberated version of that particular impulse. And we go, that's really great. Right, to speak the language in a poetic way. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Right, because again, you know, I will compost my harumphitude, but a lot of what goes out there in the astrology realm, you know, there's the popular writing thing, you know, when Lollapalooza and Venus, you know, with big hunk Martin, it's like, oh God, you know, the language, and that's why, you know, this beautiful language, I think, just helps us organize in thematically everything that we're interested in, you know. Trelawney's rich culturalness, wonderful, bringing to the table, and you know, rivers, you know, right, the Renaissance horary, we go, oh, because part of the dynamic, syncretism is a sacrament, you know, again, crossing borders, it's like the heretic. So we go, I like this from here, but not that, and this from over here, but not that. And then to each one of us, brew, extend, inhale, collage, no, extend, inhale, edit, collage, and then put forth again. There we go. You know, and, you know, and also, you know, to get down into the, I know some people are like, I want to get back into reading charts. And we go, right, okay. You know, many ways approaching this. I think the dedicated backstage invocation that each one of us might craft for themselves, you know, going, of what's intended is a useful thing. I think in this time of throwing everything into the cauldron and what shall we ladle out, I think crafting our criterion for that. And because we're in, you know, kind of trickster council, you know, that which is liberating. And so the asking everything, like, what did you want to be before you got, and in our own lives or in the lives of others or, you know, whatever, in kerfuffles and muscle spasms, we go, what did you want to be before you were neurotic, right? It's like, what did this want to be? And to track things back and, you know, to be agents of like safety and unfurling. And I guess that, you know, so, yes, to learn to speak the language in a poetic way. Right. And, you know, and we extend, you know, it's the Dante thing that I learned from Dan Brown, because I'm not proud. But, you know, he quotes Dante going, you know, sing to me, O muse, you know, and through me tell the tale. And for each person to take into their heart, you know, sing to me, O muse, you know, and through me tell the tale. There's a humility to it. There's a, Pluto says, we don't source power, we invite it. We invite it with our words and our dedications and our actions. Right. So sing to me, O muse, and through me tell the tale, I think is great. And Susan says, accessibility as part of our atmosphere, that things are accessible. I'm happy to be
here. This was all in response to asking, what do we want out of this council?
And what does accessibility, what might accessibility mean?
Hmm.
Oh, but liberation from doom and gloom astrology. Definition. Right. Right. Jim Lewis used to say doom and gloom predictions are for people with balloon payments too. My debts are, might as well have the whole thing go to hell. Right. It's that would be too easy. Again, our trickster is against all odds, you know, and live, you know, it's way back at the beginning of astrology for me, in which I said to myself as a 17-year-old, either this and magic are completely true, in which case it's the way to go. And even if it's not true, it's still the way to live. So can't lose, right? Here we go. And it was an important part, you know, to be with these older, pretty sophisticated people, because we went through stuff. We picked up Aleister Crowley's, you know, magic and theory and practice, and we're like, No, abusing power, Alistair. No. So we got to clear up some principles right away. And see, that's the QAnon, the delusion thing, is like inflation deriving status, not democratic, right? You know, and a kind of compensatory condescension. See, you look down on me, but now I know and you don't, right? And so we want to dissolve all of that, for sake of world. There we go. So liberation, yeah, from doom and gloom astrology. Well, it's quirky, right? Because at the huge astrology conferences, sometimes it's, a thousand astrologers from all over the world. But it is very trippy, because the Russian astrologers are very gloomy, very gloomy. And even, you know, the Greek thing, a friend of mine who's you know, history of theater person, but she says the essence of Greek drama is it's gonna get you. It did, right? So, right, that's right. And I don't know if it's, I want to replace the word optimistic with playful. I think optimistic is a slight, it's got a slight vulnerable thing to it. Liberation from doom and gloom astrology and permission to be playful. Right, because I think it's a little, yeah, optimistic is like, it's going to be fine. But playful is a kind of collaborative. Yes, all of this, that's good, that's good. Deconditioning, right, exactly. There we go. Into the cauldron, you know, known or unknown. And that's where we'll begin to do even more with our creative complicity and fashioning our lives and our contributions and all of that. You know, next week, and with some notes after this as well. Yeah, we have, because I did, you know, I've loaded everybody's chart up into our particular file, and it's like, okay, we have 5 Virgo moons, we have 2 youngest of 5 dragons with Jupiter and Taurus. Hi there, Annette. We have, you know, many people with planets at 14 degrees. Uranus is humming that. It's Annette's Pluto, and Mars at 11 Leo, which is the undercover agent degree. That's really great. We have Angela's moon at 21 Libra. That's my son. So you've been Pluto square, and you also have, just for the fun of it, sun at 23 Cancer. I love older astrologer ancestor now, J.H. Jacobs, said a Cancer is just a Scorpio in a house coat. It's a really great astrology joke, because it's really right. All signs have their PR, and Cancer's like, I'm very kind, I'm very, I just as fierce as the thing. But let's say that we're all part of one group mind. So for Angela, I don't know if you're still here, Angela. Is Angela here? Somewhere. There you are. Hi.
I'm here.
That's great. So here's a fun thing, which is Pluto is opposing your sun, but Neptune is trining it. Mm-hmm. So the sun in Cancer, I mean, the Pluto transit, I mean, is it resonant to yourself to go, Pluto says, let go of control, let go of all the outer forms that you thought proffered safety? And Neptune says you can have it all back on a truer form. I mean, are you restructuring everything?
Everything. And that's exactly it. I feel like Pluto's just like sitting on my chest. but there is a dream world that I feel like there's light at the end of the tunnel. I'm not sure how to mesh the two at the moment, but yeah, both of those are totally...
I think wheel and deal. Well, see, Neptune gives all of us the metaphoric agility, and it's like you might want to change the metaphor of Pluto sitting on your chest, right? Just that was interesting for a minute, and then let's just throw that down there. Pluto, deconditioning from the entire history of your family. You know, you go, they're gonna letting go of old things, you know, and what shall you ladle out? What's the desirable authentic? What's the liberating authentic? Certainly Pluto disrupts the conditioned, and it puts, you know, all of us, you know, outside of the constraints of mainstream culture. And for some reason, I just want to also bring in now as part of our deconvening, you know, thing. But there's a beautiful thing about Pluto, which is brewing medicine for others, and that sometimes we will do for others what we won't do for ourselves. Sometimes our shadow is our good self. And the thing that I've been using of late, that just memories come back up, talking to a woman who was in a deeply dangerous relationship, a really dangerous marriage, right? And couldn't leave for all the reasons we've heard. And I just, you know, trickster, this is where we're open to trickster, where we cultivate our receptivity, where we're just willing to do the bold thing if it's, you know. And I said to her, okay, but the entire team of women in similar circumstances is counting on you. And she was like, really? Team counting on me? Well, bleepin' hell. Went home, got a restraining order, kicked the guy out, and started a women's shelter. Right, that sometimes we will do for others. You know, sometimes our shadow is our goodness. You know, been brewing a lot with, you know, reports that said, you know, actually crisis and disaster bring out the good in communities more, you know, more than the conditioned hype, the, you know, hyper yang death frenzy urgency thing. Like, oh, excellent. And to read the art, the chart of others in a liberating way. Yes, we will lay all these things out. An opportunity for recreation. Yes, yes, yes. Recreating to, as we honor each being, you know, Neptune eager for us and sextiling the moon and to reassume responsibility for dreaming the world into being. There we go. We're plighting our troth, right? So recreation, recreating everything into the cauldron. What shall we ladle out for self and others? And that's everything, you know. And as we know, this language is descriptive. You know, the Saturn in Aquarius, square Uranus in Taurus, on our work table thematically for the year. It is Sir Herbert Reed saying only those serving an apprenticeship to nature should be trusted with technology. Now we're back to biomimicry. And it is part of, you know, again, I'm working these things too. It's part of our experiment for every kind of Saturn thing as an incentive to spiral and create greater beauty. And, you know, and that's where we then also bring in Neptunian metaphoric agility. Here's this thing. Here's this deep appointment we all have with ourselves, you know, in the underworld. You know, I'm going, whoa. You know, again, going, here's me. There's my life. Are they in accord? Well, see, trickster loves discrepancy. Everything's an ally if we work with it. So we go this sense of discomfort, you know, a Neptune part of us chimes in going, excellent, it's a giant grain of sand in our giant pearl. We're going to make a pearl out of this. It's our giant grain of sand in our giant oyster self. So yes, opportunity for recreation, work more deeply with trans-Saturnians. Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, to see them everywhere. Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, that's my great love. Although we will introduce, we love everybody. Learning to weave in more magical, mythical language to my consults. Yeah. Again, you know, we are here by the power of our dedication now and when we diaspora, and then we're, the Asclepion's gates are open to all of us tonight. You know, little rhodiola root. roots, you know, and the dedication, you know, and Uranus says, you know, where would you like the muse? Where would you like genius? And Neptune says, you don't even need to know. We don't even need to know. We just want you to wonder. I wonder where I'd like genius, where I'd like to magnetize the next clue, the next opening for self and others. You know, the right book, the right whatever it is, you know, that's why making our dedication and what do we want to feel like and what do we want to feel like to others, those questions are so useful together. That calibrates and hones and tones our signal so that we're more likely to then call in response. There is a humility to it. That these qualities of eloquence and grace and Thor's hammer, they are loaned to us from the fairy world. right? This is what all the myths say. You may have them, but not to derive status from them. You may have them to do good and to turn them back in, you know, says the Arthurian legends on occasion. But in a fun and playful way now, it's like, where would each one of us, like, you know, genius, breakthrough, changes? This dredging up of Pluto pulls everything up like ribbon grass. So we're probably all pretty intimate with our befoibelments, could be, you know. And so we can go, where would each one of us, by the power of the group and the power of this group, to, you know, be in a state of reciprocal blessing, you know, may it go well for you, to break some old spell and take some new vow. And we'll work with that in a more dedicated fashion. But the model briefly that some of you and I have been playing with, but it's ongoing useful. These deconditionings, you know, take us all the way back to, you know, the history of our human race, but also back to our early childhood. You know, and it says, well, we all take vows as children, meaning a working definition of reality and how we must be to survive. And it's useful for a while. But then it goes blah, blah, blah, blah, blah into the unconscious, where a once useful vow is now a binding spell. And we can feel that when things are like, well, this isn't going well, or and it's a calling, you know, and then to throw that into the cauldron. See, we don't even have to know what it is, although it is fun to track, and we'll do that, to say, in case I ever took a vow, known or unknown, that was once useful but is no longer, I throw it into the cauldron and ladle out this new, more fun vow. So does that sound like a fun, useful thing to do? Possibly. Possibly. That's right. Angela says yes to everything above. May we have charitable hearts. Yes, yes, yes, yes. Yes, and that is the, yeah, etymology. I mean, this language wants us to be cultivated people in order to access its real riches, you know. And Matthew Arnold said, to be cultured is to be acquainted with the highest possibilities of the human spirit throughout time. Well, that's a start. I want to expand everything beyond merely humans. The highest possibility of wolves and dandelions and moss and throughout time, but the more cultured. So yes, our word charisma comes from charis, from which we get charitable. So true charisma is Cordelia, dedicated heart. So true charisma is a charitable heart. So all the moon in Leos there, all the moon in Leos who are completing the yod. And all the 1950s Pluto and Leo people, resources to the more technical items is understanding what constitutes a transit. Sure, I will take all this to heart. And Annette, oh good, open for using your chart too. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Right, the talks on how the planets are speaking in relationship aspects. Yes, yes. My computer might die. There we go. Okay. Good luck to you. There we go. Yes. Process of rewriting my personal mythology. Right. My old myth is no longer helpful, says Trelawney. Well, for self and for others, you know, the divine wants to be liberated from past confines of human imagination. So for each one of us also to craft, you know, how do we like to address big mystery? You know, in a shape-shifting way. I personally like addressing the divine as like a giant coyote bowing down, dangerous in a good way, going, woof, woof, want to play. Mary Oliver, wonderful Virgo's poem, I sing in praise of this, I sing in praise of that. I sing in praise to the coyote that came at me with its strong teeth bared, and then at the last moment, smiled, right? It's kind of like life now. It's like, oh, no, no, oh, no, oh, okay. If we ally with Trickster, You know, it's like scary, scary, smile, magnetism, against all odds, pirouetting out. That's good. All righty then, team. Right, does anybody want to say anything further at the moment before we deconvene? And we will brew all this into the meal that satisfies everybody. There we go.
I'll just say that I'm Erin. I'm the one who emails you. And if you haven't gotten my emails regularly, we will continue to be in touch. And we'll be sending a lot of fun references that were mentioned today soon.
And there's Erin.
Yes, yeah. And Capricorn double Virgo over here.
Right.
So.
That's right. Moon in Virgo, 25 Virgo, double Virgo over here, Sun at 25 Capricorn, Pluto right on it. It's my rising sign. We've noticed spooky similarities. We both sort of fell and twisted ourselves on the same day, you know, and that, I mean, small things, large things, whatever, but it's, you know, but cooperating with it. Yeah, so there's Erin. And anybody else want to chime in? But so thank you. And then just, you know, let me see what I wanted to do here. A blessing poker is always useful. Are we up for dream incubation, the Asclepions being available tonight? There we go.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. So, yes. Wonderful. So, you know, just, the rituals, again, crucial breaking of spells. Expectation is the partner of disappointment, but willingness is the dance partner of life, right? Say small verbal distinction, huge energy difference. We go, so I like for self and others, you know, going, you know, and even Jupiter chimes in with Pluto and says, I'm going to make everything bigger. So whatever you don't want bigger, throw it into Pluto's cauldron. We go, well, wouldn't it be witty if we were to throw into the cauldron all past, present, and future expectation and consequent disappointment? We go, yes, and ladle out willingness, which is Uranus's sacrament, going, I'm going to connect you to the coolest things possible. All I want from you is a gesture of willingness. And we go, we're willing. And the backstage goes, they've hoisted their sails of willingness. Let's send the wind. Here we go, there we go. Yeah, so Neptune says we're at sea. Whoa, but we have a boat, says Saturn, which has a tiller on it. That's our dedication, steers this boat. And the winds are coming. Uranus and Jupiter are sky gods, even though Uranus is in Taurus. And Uranus wants us just to hoist our sails. And Jupiter wants us to hoist our smaller sail by all the journeys we've taken, the 12-year cycle. Whatever we wanted to do 12 years ago wasn't time, now it is. There we go, just wondering that. That's wonderful. All right, team, any other things you want to say as we deconvene right now? Maybe it's let me see if I can find the homage. Okay, so I'm going to just share a little bit of sound here for a moment. I'm going to do this. Okay, pay no attention to the visual thing, right? It's just like, oh no, that's not what I wanted at all. Sorry, never mind. Wait, oh, I had something queued up. Wait a minute. All right, this is where we're just, we're all backstage together. There we are. All right, there we go. Wait a minute. It's a little bit of lighthearted playfulness. So I think this will, if I share it, there we go. We're all in this thing together here. There we go. Okay, share the screen. And then it's going to just share the audio. All right, share the sound. I think this will work. Share sound. I don't know if I actually have to show the iTunes thing, but all right. We're seeing everything. All right. So, okay. It's just a little teensy bit of whimsy.
Hey, weird. Peculiar.
Wait. We'll start at the beginning here. All right. Here we go. It's our deconvening prayer.
What was that?
That was very strange.
It was very weird.
Peculiar.
It was kind of amusing.
Yes, it was rather funny.
It was incredibly funny.
I loved it.
Hilarious.
So it might not be incredibly funny yet, but we're getting there. We're getting there. And we welcome Statler and whatever the thing is that as well. So thank you. Exactly. Wonderful, deep, meaningful conversing is on. Thank you. Who shared? Nice to meet you. Looking forward to more time together. Right. We'll send out little guiding notes. May everyone feel sufficiently encouraged, right? May everyone feel sufficiently available to the Asclepion, to the guiding. May wonder attract revelation. There we go. In this call and response, you know, I wonder what though, okay, right? So that's what we're feeding in each other. And we can go through the, all of that. So good. Good night.
Thank you, Caroline.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night. Good night, everyone.
I'm leaving.
Good night. See you soon.
Night.